Welcome to Richard Ellis Talks with Richard Ellis. Thanks for allowing us to share this time with you. Honestly, it's our favorite time of the day where we get to hang out together and talk about how the truth of God's Word can make a huge difference in your life. And that's what we're going to hear from Richard in a way that only he can do, with words of hope, insight, and humor. You may be stuck in traffic or stuck in life. Either way, today's message is going to help get you on the right track as you learn how much God loves you right where you are. So let's get right into today's talk. Here's Richard Ellis.
The title of today's message is What Happens Here Stays Here. And if you've seen these wacky ads on TV for Las Vegas, they've kind of gone from trying to appeal to families. They figured out that didn't work. Little kids don't gamble as much as they used to. So they've gone back more to this exotic, erotic, sexual, wild atmosphere in Vegas, trying to draw people in that way. Now, how in the world can we believe that you can go to a place and do what you want with no consequence? Some kind of neutral zone or moral immunity is granted to those who go to this location. Whatever happened to truth in advertising? The biggest lie on the planet is that you could possibly go to some city, and because you're in that city, whatever happens here stays here. There is no consequence to your behavior. The best thing to use when promoting a place like Sin City is a lie, because a lot of it is built on deception. You say, well, I've been to Vegas, I didn't gamble, I didn't pick up a prostitute, I didn't do any of those things. I had a great time, so it's not a bad place. I'm not saying any place in itself necessarily is a bad place, but when it entices you to come and the premise of the enticement is a lie, that you can do whatever you want to do and get away with it, you're in trouble. Look at John chapter 8, verse 44. Jesus is speaking to some religious people in this case. And he says, you are of your father the devil, and the desires of your father you want to do. He was a murderer from the beginning and does not stand in the truth, because there is no truth in him. When he speaks a lie, he speaks from his own resources. Why? For he is a liar and the father of it. Every time we get sucked into some sin or Sin City or wherever it is probably based on some lie. The devil comes and says, if you do this, this is what's going to happen. But he never takes you beyond the pleasure to the pain to the consequence of what happens. The enemy uses lies to get us to sin. Now look over at Hebrews chapter 12, a few pages to your right. Hebrews chapter 12, and we'll look at verses 1 and 2. And I'm going to take a little bit different twist on this Hebrews passage than is normally taken and ask you a question about maybe where you get hit. Hebrews 12 verse 1 says this, therefore we also, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which so easily ensnares us, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Now, I normally would ask this question, and I will, and then we'll move to something else. What is the sin that so easily ensnares you or besets you? I don't want no raised hands, please. Just think about it to yourself. Where do you get clobbered? Okay? Now, I ask the question, where do you get clobbered? Not in terms of the category, but I want you to move beyond the actual sin you get hit with, and I want you to think of the location. Where do you get clobbered? Where do you get hit with this sin that so easily besets you? Because if you talk to people, and we shared really what these things are, there are certain times of the day, for instance, in certain places where you're completely safe. But if you get in the wrong place at the wrong time of day, you are more susceptible to your temptation. For instance, if you're alone, maybe you're more susceptible to whatever it is. For some people, it's food. For some people, it's sex. For some people, it's alcohol. For some people, it's shopping or money or shoes or whatever your deal is. And you get in that place, and there are certain places, and if you say, well, I've identified what my problem is, and I'm praying and asking God to help me not get hit by this so often, but I'm not changing my location. And for some people, it literally means, for instance, driving home a different way from work. Maybe your whole life you've driven home and there are experiences and memories that a certain location brings, and you just finally say, God, if I have to drive 10 miles out of the way, I'm not going home that way anymore. And you talk to people, doesn't you have to go to Sin City to have sin in a city? Do you talk about guys who have been involved, for instance, going to strip clubs in a previous life or even in their Christian life, it's still a temptation. And literally going a certain way through a certain part of town, you might as well back up and go loop the whole city to avoid that because you don't need that. Where do you get hit? Now, what I have to ask myself and what we all have to ask ourselves is not only what is the sin, but where is this sin? Where is the here? What happens here stays here. Where is your here? And are you so fed up with your sin and so mad at the devil for the way he deceives you, but realize it is ultimately your responsibility? God has given us the power to overcome these temptations and sin, and you're willing to say, God, I know what the problem is, but now I see where the here of it is. I'm going to take steps, take measures to get away from the here of it, not just be aware of what the problem is. Now, literally for somebody, if you have a gambling problem, for instance, Vegas is probably not a great place for you to go. You say, well, I'm just going for the shows. You know what? There are not many shows worth going to. You say, well, I'm not going to have fun anymore. You know what? Your idea of fun, my idea of fun, you wouldn't be sitting here listening to me if you were having so much fun out there anyway. You'd be out there having fun still. You wouldn't give a rat's anything what God says or the Bible says or anything. You say, you know what? Forget it. I'm going back out there in the world. The reason you're even listening here or by radio or tape or somewhere is you're like, I've had enough of that, but I still am getting ensnared by these same stupid sins, and it's not even new stuff. It's the same old one that so easily besets me, and now I see where the here is. I can't go home this way. I can't watch TV late at night. I can't go to these kind of movies. I can't go to that all-you-can-eat restaurant anymore. Food might be your problem. Now, everybody got their thing. And everybody got the where of it. You're kind of getting an idea. You know what? There really is some location to this. I know how to avoid this in some ways. Consequence. Let me read you the definition of consequence. Having important effects or influence, the outcome of an event, especially as relative to an individual, a phenomenon that follows and is caused by some previous phenomenon. It is too easy to screw up and too impossible to clean it up once you have. When if you hadn't been there in the first place, you wouldn't have that problem. When I sit down with husbands or wives who one has cheated on the other, you know what? That little fleeting moment, that little bit of pleasure that what happened there was supposed to stay there, it didn't stay there. It was uncontainable. It was explosive. It created more disaster, more havoc. And you say, well, on TV, they all get away with it. You know, maybe somebody dies every once in a while, but it's just TV. It's not your life. And I don't have to leave this room. I can take you row by row, seat by seat, and point out people who have lived through the pain. And the fact is, what happened there did not stay there. It came into their house, their heart, their home, their life, and created chaos and destroyed a family and affected children. It doesn't stay there. Look at Job chapter 4. It's in the Old Testament, J-O-B. This is Eliphaz, one of Job's friends. Good friends showed up, shut up for 7 days, listened to him, just sat there with him. Then they started talking, and some of what they said was true, some of it was not accurate. But one of the comments that Eliphaz makes to Job in chapter 4, verse 8, he says, even as I have seen, those who plow iniquity and sow trouble reap the same. Those who plow iniquity and sow trouble reap the same. You cannot put something in the ground and expect something else to come out of the ground. If you sow a righteous life, you will reap a righteous life. If you sow sin, if you sow iniquity, you're going to reap that trouble. It's going to come up. What are you thinking? What am I thinking that if I can do this and expect something different, it violates everything? Now, it doesn't mean that God cannot intervene. And I don't, you know, this is a warning in a way to all of us that I'm trying to give today. But even if you've screwed it completely up, is there mercy? Yes. Can God work in spite of it? Yes. But is there consequence? Is there pain? Yes, there is. It's lifelong. So you say, well, then I've screwed up, that God won't take me now. Certainly, you can't go too far. God will take you back. But why go that far and get to the place where you have this pile of you-know-what that you've got to take to God to clean up? Just step back and say, I don't want to go that far. I don't want to get to that point. God, help me. Look at Proverbs chapter 1 and following. And I'm going to read you quite a, maybe some lengthy excerpts from Proverbs 1. Proverbs chapter 1, let's just pick up with verse 1. The Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel. To know wisdom and instruction, to perceive the words of understanding, to receive the instruction of wisdom, justice, judgment, and equity, to give prudence to the simple, to the young man, knowledge and discretion. A wise man will hear and increase learning, and a man of understanding will attain wise counsel. To understand a proverb and an enigma, the words of the wise and their riddles. In other words, if you've got wisdom, you'll listen. One of the great frustrations, forget anybody else, is just me and God. And I read the scriptures and God says to me, what are you going to do about this? And I say, I see it, God, but I still struggle with it. And he says, well, choose, do something, change, trust me. And we struggle. Wisdom says, you know what? I don't have to step out on this limb and see how strong it is. I'll stay near the trunk and just let it be. I don't have to risk my life and limb or anything else. I'll stay here. I'll stay safe. Foolishness says, well, let's see how far I can go without killing myself. Look at verse 7. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Now, as much as I have these thoughts, the fears that come into me about losing my wife, my children, my family, the consequence of sin, ultimately, what ought to break all of our hearts, our fear ought to be a righteous, godly, holy fear of God. And it's not about, is this going to wreck my life? Is it going to affect my relationship with a God who is so patient with me and is so gracious and merciful that he would give his own son, that when I do sin, and because I have sinned, there is forgiveness, there is mercy. Why would I push my luck in his grace instead of just saying, God, I fear you, and I do fear the consequence of my sin. Give me wisdom to step back and to take account and to be careful with the places I go, the things that I do. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. And if you've ever sat and talked to a fool, you know who they are, because you tell them things, you speak to them, and they look at you with this just blank stare and go right back to their vomit, as the Bible describes it. And you think, are you a fool? And the answer is yes. They will not listen. Until what? Until the consequences come crashing down. Now all of a sudden they're listening. And is there hope? Certainly. Why go to that extent? Fools despise wisdom and instruction. My son, Solomon says here to his son, my son, hear the instruction of your father and do not forsake the law of your mother, for they will be a graceful ornament on your head and chains about your neck. Look at this advice, verse 10. My son, if sinners entice you, do not consent. Now, for some people, you know what that verse means? Don't go to Vegas. That's simple. But I'm going to have fun, and then what happens there is going to stay there, and I can just go be wild and crazy, and there's no consequence. You know what? You're a fool if you think that. If sinners entice you, do not consent. Don't buy in. Don't get sucked in. If they say, come with us, let us lie in wait to shed blood. Let us lurk secretly for the innocent without cause. Let us swallow them alive like Sheol and whole like those who go down to the pit. We shall find all kind of precious possessions. We shall fill our houses with spoil. Cast in your lot among us. Look down there in verse 19. So are the ways of everyone who is greedy for gain. It takes away the life of its owners. Down in verse 23, he's talking here in the next few verses about how wisdom cries out. Verse 22, let's do 22. How long, you simple ones, will you love simplicity? For scorners delight in their scorning, and fools hate knowledge. Turn at my rebuke. Surely I will pour out my spirit on you. I will make my words known to you. Because I have called and you refused, I have stretched out my hand and no one regarded, because you disdained all my counsel and would have none of my rebuke, I also will laugh at your calamity. I will mock when your terror comes, when your terror comes like a storm and your destruction comes like a whirlwind, when distress and anguish come upon you. And you know what? It will come. I sit too long with too many people with all this crap in their lives and on their lives, and you look at them and it's a simple turn, a simple decision that leads to another and another and another, and it's catastrophic. Look at Proverbs chapter 15, a few pages to the right. Proverbs 15, verse 3. You know what? I'm going to read you this verse, and I still don't think I get it because we play games with ourselves and with God. See, we think, if nobody catches me, I didn't get caught. What are you going to do with this verse? The eyes of the Lord are in every place, keeping watch on the evil and the good. Omnipresent God, everywhere, all the time, knows exactly what I'm doing every second of the day. You say, well, I didn't get caught. Nobody saw me thinking that or doing that or going there. You know what? God saw you, and He's the only one you ought to be worried about anyway because He can get you. You say, well, that's what I thought. God was out to get me. He's out to get you because He loves you, and if He doesn't come after you, you're not His kid. God disciplines His children. Proof that I am His child is that He comes after me, cares enough about me as a parent to come discipline me, to teach me, to get me back to Himself. The people that aren't God's children go do whatever the heck they want to do, and you know what? They just live with the consequence. Their trouble is not offending God. If they die without Him, it's hell forever. You say, oh, hellfire, brimstone. You're going to have to rewrite the book, guys. It's in here. We use the book. If you don't like the book, go find you another church. There's plenty of watered-down vodka out there if that's what you want. Look at Proverbs chapter 28, verse 13. He who covers his sins will not prosper, but whoever confesses and forsakes them will have mercy. Now, as simply as I can put this, guys, confess your sin. Whether people call it false guilt, you know what, God, it's real to me because I'm living with it. I am sick of this. And if you're telling me you can erase this, maybe there's still some consequence in my life to this behavior, to these choices that I've made, but essentially there is forgiveness, there's mercy. Sign me up. I acknowledge I'm a sinner. I need your forgiveness. I do believe that Jesus died, shed His blood to pay for my sin, was buried and raised from the dead, and I'm in. I want you in me, living in me, through me, change me. Forgive me, cleanse me, all these things, God. I am confessing my sin, and I'm not covering it up anymore. I confess it. I'm forsaking it. The woman caught in adultery. Finally, at the end, nobody would stone her, and He says, neither do I condemn thee. Go and sin no more. Forsake your sin. Look at Luke 8, verse 17. And I'm reading you these from the Old and the New Testament. It is everywhere. Luke 8:17, for nothing is secret that will not be revealed, nor anything hidden that will not be known and come to light. Nothing is secret that will not be revealed, nor anything hidden that will not be known or come to light. Look a few pages over at Luke 12, verses 1 and following. Another situation in Jesus' life here says, in the meantime, when an innumerable multitude of people had gathered together so that they trampled one another, there are so many people around there trampling each other, He began to say to His disciples, first of all, beware of the leaven of the Pharisees, which is hypocrisy. For there is nothing covered that will not be revealed, nor hidden that will not be known. Therefore, whatever you have spoken in the dark will be heard in the light. Think about what you've spoken in the dark. Sweet nothings to someone who means nothing to you, really. Whatever you have spoken in the dark will be heard in the light, and whatever you have spoken in the inner rooms will be proclaimed on the housetops. You think, well, nobody's going to know. I said it right here. I did it right here. It's just me. There was nobody here. It was just a few of us. Jesus says, you know what? It's going to come out. Now turn to Galatians chapter 6, and we may spend a few moments here, and then we're done. Galatians chapter 6. And the context of this passage is giving to help people who are in need. It's a financial context, but the principle applies to any category in life. Galatians chapter 6, verse 7 and following. And it's pretty cut to the chase. It shouldn't take much explanation because it is what it is and says what it says. Galatians 6, 7. Do not be deceived. Why? God is not mocked. For whatever a man sows, that he will also reap. And the word here for deceived means to cause to stray, lead aside from the right way, to be led into error, to be led away into error and sin. Don't be deceived. Do not be deceived. How are you deceived? By thinking that there is no consequence, that you're not going to reap what you sow. God is not mocked. And it's interesting, the word mocked here comes from the word that means snout. And it means to turn up the nose or sneer at, to mark or deride. And it's like going, what, God? Just mocking him. What are you going to do? Turn your nose up at him and mock him and see what happens. Do not be deceived. God is not mocked. What happens? The law, the principle is whatever a man sows, that he will also reap. Whatever seed you plant, that plant is coming out of the ground. You cannot sow your wild oats and then pray for a crop failure the next day. Look at verse 8. For he who sows to his flesh will of the flesh reap corruption. But he who sows to the Spirit will of the Spirit reap everlasting life. So are you sowing to the flesh or are you sowing to the Spirit? You say, you know what? I don't care. What are you talking about all this for? You know what? You may not care today. You're going to care. Because if you don't pay attention and you don't listen and you don't get it and you are deceived and you do mock God, you will reap what you sow. And when the crop comes in, you'll be back going, hey, well, what were y'all talking about? What do I do now? I'm saying don't wait for the crop. Start sowing a new field. Say, God, enough's enough. Please, there's going to be enough consequence from what I've already done. Don't let more come into my life. And you know what's so tragic in my life and in all of our lives is we can hear this. We can get warning after warning. And we go, well, yeah, I guess that's true. What are we having for lunch? And go right back to our vomit. And then you get a week down the road, a year down the road, and look back. And God is merciful and he's gracious, but you start asking yourself, what was I thinking? Look at verse 9. Let me read you 8 and 9 together. For he who sows to his flesh will of the flesh reap corruption, but he who sows to the Spirit will of the Spirit reap everlasting life. And let us not grow weary while doing good, for in due season we shall reap if we do not lose heart. Therefore, as we have opportunity, let us do good to all, especially to those who are of the household of faith. Now, let me read you that verse 9 again. And let us not grow weary while doing good, for in due season we shall reap if we do not lose heart. If you have a field and you sow in that field, you put seed in the ground and you look at it and go, well, nothing's happened. I'm going to go buy me another field. Be patient. Don't grow weary. Don't give up on your field. Because any farmer, anybody knows anything about agriculture is you don't put it in the ground and boom, it pops up. It takes a long time. So don't give up on your field, because if you give up on your field, you go over and buy you another one, start over, and then give up on that one, and keep moving. Somebody else is going to reap from your field. Stick with it. Do not grow weary in well-doing. Why? For in due season, you'll reap. Something good is going to come from it. Do not lose heart.
We'll get back to Richard in a moment to close out today's talk. But first, I want to share something about our program. Our mission is actually very simple, to take the planet. So it's our prayer that these daily talks from Richard aren't something you only hear and enjoy, but that they inspire you to share with others. Together, we can do this. The message of the gospel is something everyone needs to hear, and that's why it's such a priority to us. So join us in this important mission. Call us at 855-6-RICHARD to say you're in. Or you can get on board with us through our website, richardellistalks.com. Well, here's Richard with some closing thoughts for us.
Now, there is one place where what happens here stays here is true. And it's at the foot of a cross. And if you ever make it to the foot of that cross, and you look up into those eyes, and you see that bloodshed, and you get it, and you say, God, I got nothing to bring you, but my past, my pain, all my crap. But I'm going to have a conversation with you, Jesus, and I'm going to ask you to take all my stuff and put it on yourself and pay my way. And my understanding is that what happens here stays right here. And the God of the universe died on a real cross and shed his own blood to make possible you going to him and leaving your stuff and walking away clean. Not without some consequence sometime, but you can have consequence in your life and wake up every day pure and clean and holy and separate and not attached to that sin anymore, forgiven forever. And if you have never been there or done that as a Christian, you may need to go there and have a little talk with Jesus. And as a non-Christian, you may need to go to that spot in your heart, in your mind's eye, and have a little talk with Jesus. Now, the great thing about this Jesus you talk to when you leave it there, they didn't leave him there either. They tried to bury him and lock him up and seal him away. But the God that lives in me raised that Jesus from the dead. And he is alive. He's conquered death. He's conquered life. He's conquered Vegas and everything in between. If we will, in wisdom, receive his forgiveness, receive his mercy, his hand extended to us, respond to that and receive that, your whole life can be changed.
This has been Richard Ellis Talks with Richard Ellis. There's only one reason we do this program: to take the planet with the good news of Jesus Christ. That's our message and our mission. And you have a vital part of doing that along with us. If you've been encouraged by these talks with Richard, be sure to share with someone about the change they've made in your life. And we'd love to hear your story as to how the talks have made a difference to you. Give us a call. We'd love to talk with you. 855-6-RICHARD. You can also reach us through our website, richardellistalks.com. And while you're there, check out all the fun and informative pages we put together for you, richardellistalks.com. While you're there, be sure to click on the Contribute tab at the top to send your generous gift. If the program is making a difference to you, your gift will make a big difference to us. Until next time, thanks so much for listening to Richard Ellis Talks.